Matthew chapter 11, verse number 25. Matthew chapter 11, starting at verse number 25. It says, at that time, Jesus said, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and learned and revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for this is what you were pleased to do. All things have been committed to me by my Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. I'd like to read verses 28 through 30. From the Message translation, because it was when this text was read to me from the Message that it hit me so powerfully and has stuck with me for about the past 5 or 6 years. So Matthew 11, verse number 28, this is from the Message translation. It says, are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Those are powerful words. Anyone here suffer from FWP? Anybody? FWP? Oh, sorry. First world problems. First world problems. Anyone here suffer from first world problems? Anyone don't know what first world problems are? These are first world problems. The battery on my cell phone just isn't good. That's a first world problem. I mean, you know, when you consider what people in third world countries go through, you know, suffering with hunger and everything, having a bad battery is a first world problem. Or here's one. It's so cold in here. They have the temperature set at 72 degrees. What? I'm starving, and all we have in the refrigerator are leftovers. Or you're at the buffet and the buffet just doesn't look good today. They don't have my favorite on the buffet. They don't have good desserts. They don't have good appetizers. Those are first world problems. Tap water. Oh, it's so bad. I only drink Dasani. Those are first world problems. And again, when you put those problems up against problems that are facing our globe right now, it seems like those problems just they seem to pale in comparison when you talk about communities who are fighting starvation and disease and you know, places where they're not necessarily concerned with the temperature as much as making sure that their family have nets so that they don't get bitten by mosquitoes, so that they don't get malaria and die from a mosquito bite. You know, there are some people in third world countries that would love to live on a small fraction of what we live off of. I was watching a video and reading a story about cocoa farmers. Those of you who love chocolate realize that, you know, chocolate doesn't grow on trees. You have to, you know, harvest cocoa beans. And there's a story about this tribe of folks that go out and they pick the cocoa beans. And someone went back to these workers who picked the cocoa beans and gave them a piece of chocolate. They was like, what's this? They said, this is what you get from, you know, cocoa beans. And they ate it and they were like mesmerized. It was like, oh my goodness, you know, how did you make this out of this? And it pained the audience to hear that the cost of a candy bar is four times what some of these workers make a day to pick cocoa. Some make 25 cents a day working 8 hours picking cocoa beans. So next time your cell phone goes dead or it's too cold inside of your house or too hot inside of your house, just think about what others are going through. Look, it's my belief the reason why we have so many first world problems is because we have so much and too much stuff. We just have way too much. Again, comparatively speaking, we have so much money, possessions, wants, and needs. And with that, we want more money. We want bigger houses. We want better cars. We want better clothing. We want a better position in society. We want to be right. We want to be more influential. We want to be popular. We want to be more. We want more. We want more. Church, when is enough enough? This is one of the informative ideals behind fasting and reflecting on God's goodness, to come to a place where we can say with God, I have enough. And this is the place where we are drawn to in this text this morning as we read this wonderful text in Matthew chapter 11. I hope you have been reading through the Gospel of Matthew. I hope you are seeing some new things and being reminded of some things that you're familiar with in the Gospels, in the Gospel of Matthew, or the Gospels in general. It should be noted that this Gospel, like the other Gospels, were written to those who had become followers of Jesus. We might call them the early Christians, but the text calls them followers or disciples. You know, follower or disciple is what we see more prominently in Scripture. We don't see Christian that much. We only see Christian, you know, three times in the New Testament. Disciple, and it's, you know, different, you know, variations, we see over 300 times in our New Testaments. Also in the Gospels, there are about 86 instances where Jesus calls people to follow. And over 20 of those instances are found right here in the Gospel of Matthew. Followers of Jesus are his disciples. In the rabbinical tradition, you know, rabbis in Jewish culture of Israel, to follow as a disciple means that one was prepared to completely empty themselves of who they are in an effort to fill themselves with their rabbi, with their rabbi's teaching, and with their rabbi's understanding, and their rabbi's way of life. They look and they listened and they followed and they did everything that their rabbi say. They ate like their rabbi. They ate when their rabbi ate. They talked and spoke like their rabbi. They served and did actions like their rabbi. They wanted to become just like their rabbi. I've shared this in the past, but there are stages in the Hebrew way of learning. You know, kids up until the age of five, their primary place of learning Torah and Bible and about God was at home. Remember, we talked about Deuteronomy chapter 6. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, we had the Shema, Hear, O Israel, the Lord thy God is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind. And after that is said in Deuteronomy 6, it says that parents, you're supposed to teach this to your kids when they're going to bed, when you're walking with them, when you're hanging out. You teach them this. So their primary education in terms of God, who God was and what God was doing, that came in the home. But at about age five, boys, Hebrew boys, were instructed in schools, and they learned from these rabbis. And by age 10, Hebrew boys could quote the first five books of our Old Testament, the Torah, from memory. Genesis through Deuteronomy. They could quote it from memory. And then they would go into a more intense training in the rabbinical method. And by age 14, they would know what is known as the Hebrew Bible. So all the prophets, the Psalms, all committed to memory. And then after that, because young boys wanted to become rabbis themselves, they would go and sit in front of different rabbis trying to impress them, trying to let them know that they were worthy to become their followers. And they would sit in circles with rabbis and folks, and the rabbis would ask questions. And the best way to let a rabbi know that you were understanding what was being spoken and what was being taught is when a kid would ask a question back. And so we see in the Gospels, you know, there's a scene where Jesus is at the temple, and it says that Jesus was with some teachers and he was asking questions as a 12-year-old. And that impressed everyone because that meant that he understood and got the material. And if a rabbi was so impressed with what he saw from the regurgitation of a rabbinical or a rabbi's teaching, a rabbi would say, hey, I want you to come follow me. And the way he would say, come follow me, he would say, hey, take my yoke upon you and follow me. And then if they were chosen, they were covered with this blessing. They would say, may you be covered in the dust of your rabbi. Do you know what that means? You see, kind of see how that means? Be covered in the dust of your rabbi means that you are following him so close that the dust from his sandals and his shoes would get on you. That's what it means to follow. And so here we discover the cultural and religious context of Jesus' words in Matthew 11. Here is a rabbi who is inviting followers to take his yoke upon them. So what's so good about this invitation? Well, first, this invitation is for the simple-minded. It's not for the theologians. It's not for the people who can read Greek and Hebrew, who can break it down. And it's just for the simple folks. It's for the simple-hearted. It's for the simple-minded. You know, we get so caught up in people having to know stuff and having to learn stuff, and you're not good enough until you know what I know and know this and know that. But Jesus says it's just for the simple mind. These are the words of Jesus. Verse number 25 and 26 of chapter 11, in his prayer, Jesus says, thank you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth. You've concealed your ways from sophisticated and know-it-alls, but spell them out clearly to ordinary people. Yes, Father, that's the way you like to work. It continues to marvel us and puzzle us that Jesus was a simple Messiah, born in simple home, simple town. He wasn't raised in majesty and royalty. He wasn't unreachable. He walked among the people. He lived like the people. He looked like the people. There's a text in Matthew where Jesus says, look, foxes have holes, birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. He was homeless. He was simple. But it mesmerizes us that Jesus could be so simple. That just can't be that simple. And his message was simple. And typically it just amounted to him telling people, just come follow me. Just learn from me. And so to a people who are addicted to making things more complicated, Jesus has his simple call, simple invitation. Come follow me. The invitation in Matthew 11 is intended for radical relationship. Jesus says, verse number 27, the Father has given me all these things to do and say. This is a unique Father-Son operation coming out of a Father and Son intimacies and knowledge. No one knows the Son the way the Father does, nor the Father the way the Son does. But I'm not keeping it to myself. I'm ready to go over it line by line with anyone willing to listen. This call by Jesus to have this intimate relationship with Father. Yes, you know, Son knows a Father, Father knows a Son. And Jesus says, those whom I choose, they'll get to experience this intimate relationship as well. Jesus did not come to give us more religion. He came to give us relationship. Relationship with the God of this universe, the God that's so big. You know, Jesus makes this Father accessible. Jesus makes this Father someone who is close to us. You know, sometimes in our concoction of who God is, we have built God to be this old guy up in the sky with this gray beard that's looking with an eye, just waiting for us to mess up so he can strike us with lightning. That wasn't my Father. And I understand that there's some fathers that may have on this earth that may have operated like that. But my Father didn't act like that. And I made mistakes. And my dad got angry. And he let me know he got angry. He had some very creative and powerful ways to let me know that he got angry. But at the end of the day, I was my daddy's little boy. Even when I became a grown man married with children, I was still my dad's little boy. That's relationship. That's proximity. That's closeness. And that is what Jesus is inviting us to, this radical relationship. It begs the question, how close is God to us? And I wonder if that's the reason why we walk around so fearful all the time. I wonder if that's why we are inundated with fearful narratives in our families, in our communities, in our country, in our world, because we don't believe that God is close to us. But the invitation by Jesus is for us to have this close, intimate, and radical relationship with God. This invitation is for everyone. You need to understand that this is for everyone. Verse number 28 of Matthew 11 from the NIV. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. From the Message, are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you will recover your life. Jesus' invitation is universal. Men and women, young and old, black folk, white folk, brown folk, English speaking, Chinese speaking, Somalian speaking, conservatives and liberals, no one is excluded. Man, when we could get that right, when we can understand that God's call is for everybody, the most sinful and the most holy. His call is universal. Anyone willing to follow, to take his yoke upon them, come on. Come on. This invitation is for everyone, and this invitation is freeing and restful. That's why I love this text in the Message. You'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. One commentator on the Gospel of Matthew, when it comes to this text, he says that this passage holds the central message of the gospel message. That is, that Jesus is offering a life free from restraints, from burdens, from weariness, from bondage and hangups. For the original readers, this may have been the bondage of laws heaped on them in their new life as a follower of Jesus. This text is about discipleship. It's about following, but following Jesus is unlike anything, following anything or following anyone. It's unlike anything else ever to come or to be presented to us on this earth. Recall that Jesus is using language associated with the rabbinical tradition. People hearing these words know that this is about following, and it still marvels us after all these years that there were so many people who heard Jesus' call to follow, and they dropped everything and started to follow it. It just puzzles us that two apostles who had probably an okay business, fishing and catching fish and going to the marketplace and selling fish. It marvels us that these guys just dropped their nets, dropped their fish, and said, "We will follow you, Jesus." It marvels us that another set of brothers said, "Listen, someone, y'all need to take care of our dad. He is calling us. We are going to follow." Why is it when we hear Jesus' call to follow, we get hung up? We got to consider some things. There's stories in the Gospel of Matthew of some folks. One guy, "Hey, I got to go take care of my family." Jesus said, "Let the dead bury the dead. Come follow me." There's a cost to discipleship. And particularly when he asked people to follow him back then, it could have meant their very life. But I want us to understand that Jesus' call to follow may still cost us our life. It may cost us giving up first world problems. It may cause us to look at money a different way. It may cause us to look at the people we don't like a different way. It may cause us to look at this world that we're so quick to condemn and say it's just going to hell. And it may cause us to look in a different way. It may cause us to want to engage it in a different way. We may find ourselves not spending so much time at work trying to make more money. We may find ourselves going on mission trips. We may find ourselves giving up a week to go spend time with 130 kids painting in 100-degree weather. That's another plug for work camp. If you can be with us, that'd be great. That'd be great. I am a follower of Jesus. And I don't want to embarrass you and ask you to raise your hand, but I'm sure that many of you here, if I said how many people here you are a follower of Jesus, everyone would raise their hand high to the sky. And so my question is, how does it feel being a follower of Jesus? And is that enough? Is it enough that the Son of God knows you and loves you and invites you to be in relationship with the God of the universe? Is that enough? Is it enough that he invites you along with everyone in this world to be his disciples, to be his followers? Is that enough? Is it enough that he is not getting tests or putting tests in front of you to confuse you and to separate you? The people who get an A on a test, you can follow me. The people who get an F, yeah, bye-bye. Is that enough? Is it enough that his call to follow is easy? And his burden is light. This is what Jesus said. It's not me making it up. It's what Jesus says. My yoke is easy. My burden is light. Is that enough? Is it enough that he's not giving us an IQ test to see if we get it 100% and understand it 100% fully all the time, every time? Is that enough? Or maybe I'll ask the question the way it was posed to me in a group of church leaders last week. I spoke of this seminar that I attended last week. You know, if Jesus' invitation is good news, well, maybe let me pose that question first. How many people believe that this invitation in Matthew chapter 11, how many people here believe that's good news? Huh? Good news? I mean, okay news? I mean, some of y'all ain't raised your hand. Okay news? It's not bad. Well, look, how many people here think it's bad news? Okay, nobody raised their hand, so that means everyone's in agreement. So this is good news. And what this speaker said is, not only is it good news, it's the greatest good news to ever touch the face of this earth. How many people believe that? Okay. If it's such great news, why do we look miserable? Why do we sing in worship like we're miserable? Why do we go about life like we're miserable? We have the greatest news ever. This is greater than hitting a Powerball. This is great. Listen, some of you all have kids, and that's some great news. But Jesus' invitation is even greater news than that. She said, yes, that's great news. But Jesus' call is even greater than that. So why do we look miserable? It amazes me when I look back at some preachers from back in the day. You know, the preachers in Churches of Christ, they always had like two initials, you know, W-E something or J-B something. Or you ever look at their portraits? They're all like this. These are bearers of good news. What are you so upset about? I mean, was it hot outside? What's going on when they took the photograph? Like, what? Why are we so miserable if we have the greatest news ever? If we have the greatest news, that means that the way we sing our songs will reflect this good news that's living inside of us. If his burden is light and his yoke is easy, it would seem that we would walk a little more freer and freely. This is the greatest news ever. So why do we worship with long faces as if worship is a burden? Why are we addicted to negativity? Why are we not sharing this good news with everyone we come into contact with? I don't know about you, but before I share my life with other people, I usually gauge whether or not they're going to buy into it. And so many times I make the decision for them. I met a guy this past week who started a church in Kansas City, Missouri with nine people, 2009. And he put 35 pennies in his left pocket. And he promised himself for the next 2 months that he would not go home until the 35 pennies in his left pocket made it to his right pocket. Well, how does a penny make it from his left pocket to his right pocket? For every person that he invited to church, he would take a penny out of his left pocket and put it in his right pocket. And he did that for 2 months straight. I ain't ready for that, y'all. But I can do five pennies. I can tell five people a day about my relationship with God, my relationship with Jesus. And for every person I tell about that, or for every person that I invite to come to church, I can put a penny to the other pocket. I can do that. When is the last time, seriously, that you've invited someone to come to church? Or when is the last time you were about to invite somebody to church, but you said, I don't know if I want to invite them, man. This isn't that good. This stuff is going on. So I'll invite them next time. Or I'll invite them when we get everything right. I'll invite them when everything is perfect. If that's your standard, you're never going to invite anyone to church. But maybe we need to just go old school, right? Being so overwhelmed by this invitation from Jesus to be so excited about this good news, this great news, invite people to church. Where did we get tricked into thinking that following Jesus was more complicated than just first accepting Jesus' call to follow? So let me ask you, are you tired? Are you burned out? Are you worn out on religion? Jesus says, come to him and he will teach you the unforced rhythms of grace. And there, if you're tired and worn out and burned out on religion, if you're there, or maybe you're worn out and tired on some other stuff, or maybe you're stagnant, or maybe you're sick, or maybe you're mediocre, or maybe you're stuck, or maybe you're just, you know, disoriented. Whatever the case may be, Jesus is calling to you right now. Come away with me, and you'll recover your life. Let's take a listen to this untitled hymn. That we just have to come to grips with is that we have in our possession the greatest gift and the greatest news. And it should reflect in everything that we do. It should reflect in the way that we live. It should reflect in the way that we parent. It should reflect in the way that we husband and the way that we wife. I'm making those verbs. It should reflect in the way that we serve. It should reflect in the way that we work at our jobs. We all don't have perfect jobs, but the way that we work in our jobs reflect that, you know what, this job will not overcome the good news that's within me. It will not overtake this fact that I've been invited by the King to follow him and to take his yoke on and to follow him, to be with him. We have to come to grips with that. It has to flow out of us. It's got to flow out of us. We've got to tell other people about Jesus Christ. I met another man this past week from Egypt, who spent years in Egypt telling people about Jesus Christ in a country where people are being beheaded. Coptic Christians are being murdered in Egypt. He's here now studying to get his doctorate degree in Bible. And his desire is to go back to Egypt and plant churches. But while he's here, he's not stopped telling people about the good news that's inside of him. So much so that within the past year, he now is holding 25 Bible studies with Arabic-speaking folks in the Dayton area, telling them about Jesus Christ. They're about to plant a church in the Dayton area that's going to be a multicultural church plant of Hispanics and blacks and whites and Arabic, and he's going to be on staff there preaching the good news, preaching the greatest news ever to come on this planet in Arabic in Dayton. And when I talked with him, you can see that he believes in that good news that he's preaching. So all I'm saying, church, is God enough? So much so, the gospel just radiates out of our spirit. At this time, we're going to have an invitation song, church. If there's anything that we can do in terms of praying, if man, you've just been overtaken with some, if you're worn out, burned out, tired, let us surround you and pray for you. If you're tired of wanting more stuff, if you're sick of this just wanting to just climb and you keep trying to climb, and every time you get higher, there's another level you gotta go, and you're just tired of that stuff. And you just want to follow Jesus. Let us pray for you. Maybe you're ready to just recommit your life. Make a confession once again that Jesus Christ is Lord. I want to follow him. Maybe you want to, make a recommitment to your baptismal vow. Maybe you want to experience baptism this morning. Please come as we stand and sing.